And welcome to our Season 5 of the Watch Pitch podcast and YouTube channel, with our special focus on the thaw from the impacts of COVID on entrepreneurs, startups, and investors. For this episode, our fifth this season, we're going west to the Northern California coast of Redwood Forests and the world-famous Emerald Triangle of Humboldt County. Husband and wife team John O'Connor and Amy Cincion O'Connor launched a boutique hotel in the thick of COVID. And their other businesses, also squarely in the hospitality industry, have embraced the legalization of cannabis with both style and ease. Few entrepreneurs have forged this convergence of hospitality and cannabis as well and as consciously as John and Amy, along with their nearly 60 employees. COVID and all of the many regulations in California was riddled with speed bumps for the hospitality industry. And for many states here in the U.S., cannabis is still in a nascent stage of mainstream acceptance and legalization. This is a new growth sector for entrepreneurs, and we learn firsthand as parents and as shared leadership in their journey that these two have crafted with a deep commitment to communication and style, along with a dedication to consumer-focused growth and scaling. Lots to learn and discover together here, so let's get started. So, welcome to our fifth season of the Watch Pitch podcast, where we are talking to business owners who launched actually in and during COVID, or who certainly made some pretty significant pivots post-COVID. I happen to be sitting in the redwoods of Humboldt County near Arcata and Eureka, near Humboldt State University. There's a fire roaring in the fireplace, and I'm sitting with husband and wife entrepreneurs, John and Amy. They have a pretty significant business and a lot of diversity in the way they're approaching their business. And it's very much focused on cannabis, but it's not nearly limited to cannabis. And I think that one of the most exciting things that we'll just jump into right away is you are starting to crack the nut on the merging rivers, if you will, of hospitality and cannabis. So just to get us started, if you would just take a moment to introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about your businesses, and in particular, what you were thinking as COVID was starting to take over the world, as you were obviously ramping up to create a variety of businesses that were going to be building on business traction that you already had, and then like, okay, so what are we going to do, and how are we going to do it differently? And thank you so much for having me in your home and letting me steal an hour of your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Dre.
Yeah, sure.
So I'm John O'Connor. I'm a founder with Amy of Humboldt Social, and our mission is to normalize cannabis in hospitality. We have a variety of different sub-brands that we launched pre-COVID and during COVID, and maybe even post-COVID, in the world that
we're living in.
But before I get into our business, a little bit about myself. Trey and I connected years ago when we were both doing adventure facilitation, when Trey was an executive at a nonprofit that I worked at just after college. After that, I started to continue my career in adventure education and tourism, where I was building a company doing zip line tours, ropes course team building, kayaking, river rafting trainings, which is where I met Amy, where we both were working for a wilderness therapy company. So as I was building that business, I took a job for 160 days a year that I could go out and run river trips and run trainings. And then the rest of the year, I could go off and build my business. So it was a nice connection. That's ultimately where Amy and I met on a river, and I was dad and she was mom for these kids. She was a therapist, and I was the river guide. I was in charge of the physical safety of the kids and the staff, and Amy was in charge of the emotional safety and well-being and growth of these children. We have lots of stories about that, but ultimately, yes, ultimately, you know, fast forward a couple of years, Amy comes to Humboldt. She starts working as a social worker and a teacher at Humboldt State University, and we start getting into real estate. So we bought a commercial building, turned into a loft. It was number four, you know, fourth booking on Airbnb. So like very, very early in Airbnb. And then we renovated this cool building, created an industrial loft upstairs, created a tattoo shop downstairs with a bunch of OSB wood. It was kind of in trend at the time.
And this is right on the 101. This is on 101 North. It goes through downtown Eureka. Yeah.
Yep. And then right after that, after we did the renovation and we were living upstairs, we started renting it out and going on trips. But then once we got a tattoo artist as a
an anchor client
or tenant downstairs, we were living there for free, and then we were making money on top of that because the expenses were covered. So we started looking at other properties and found a dilapidated property on Humboldt Bay that we purchased and renovated over the years, and ultimately we branded that location Humboldt Bay Social Club. We rented some property across the street from that, from the Bay property, from the city of Eureka, and built a bar, small restaurant, event space, a couple hotel rooms.
And we're going to stick the links in, of course, during this so people can click on this. But just, you guys created a look and a feel that's just, I think, was ahead of its time in this era.
And just to nudge you towards that search, you can find the website for the Scotia Lodge at scotia-lodge.com. And you can find and discover the rooms and venue of the Humboldt Social Club at humboldtbaysocialclub.com. Now back to our interview.
I think you actually created a style type for Humboldt Bay that just people weren't seeing. They were kind of building on the traditional redwood Victorian buildings, and that they were just iterating on that, and you guys really did get in front of this stylistically.
So that sort of brought us to COVID. So I'll hand it off to Amy. She can fill in the gaps and introduce herself.
So now you have places for people to stay, but now COVID kicks in.
I'm Amy Cerencioni O'Connor, and I am the accidental founder of Humboldt Social. I would say because my background is in social work and therapy, and then in teaching, I had no inkling when John and I, when we first started dating and then got married, and even with our first real estate project and renovation, there was no point when I thought I'm going to be a part of this business. I thought, I'm the breadwinner, right? I get the steady paycheck and the health insurance, and John takes these risks. And I think that continues to even be a dynamic in our relationship where I'm less risk adverse than John. And there are times when I think sometimes am more risk averse, and then we have to have this kind of, we kind of stare at each other. We're having this role reversal, and it's a little disorienting, but gets really fun sometimes. Yeah. But I was, for the most part, I never expected to be as involved in the business operations as I am now, but it happened slowly. And for so long, and even today, the business really feels like an extension of our family and of our relationship. So it's even at times when I think, I don't want to do this anymore, this is too stressful, I have a very hard time letting any of it go, because I do feel a deep investment in this region and in this business model, kind of rooted in that aesthetic that you're talking about, that when we first started, it was very hard for us to see any design in Humboldt that reflected the kind of design that appealed to us when we traveled, and specifically that reflected the industrial history of Humboldt Bay. And you see lots of this Victorian sort of delicate doilies and floral wallpapers and textiles. And but what we experience is Humboldt as a working port, right? And absolutely, the lumber industry and the fishing, sure, and we find those raw materials to be really beautiful. And we find mid-century and Art Deco design to be incredibly, to feel really timeless to us. Mm-hmm. And as we look more at like Scandinavian design or even California Scandinavian and craftsman architecture, there's just so many design options out there. And I think now, when you walk through Arcata or Eureka, you do see a much more diverse range of aesthetic.
I agree, but it wasn't happening when you guys launched this thing.
Totally. And it was hard for us to even find contractors who understood what we were going for, and the idea that, no, this is the finished floor. This, we're not putting drywall over this. Like, we want this, these vents and this ductwork to be exposed. Mm. That was an uphill battle, uh-huh, for sure. And I think when COVID hit, we, like everybody else, we just shut down. You know, we followed the state and the local directives, and we just planned to just hunker down and see what happened. We thought maybe it'll be for a few weeks, a few months. And I think the real opportunity that we didn't expect was that the state and local directives were so confusing, and so many of the policies were recommendations, or they were the regulations were unclear, especially in the hospitality realm. And so while we had some directives that were telling us to shut down completely, there were others that said, actually, you're a vital business, right? Tourism is actually part of vital infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And then we had out-of-town guests who had different regulations governing their travel and restricting them in different ways. And so we had this moment where we were shutting down, and we were just turning away so many people who were still trying to travel, even though it was COVID. And so
you saw the demand.
Absolutely.
Well, we saw the demand, and we had to fish through the rules to understand what we could do. So, mm-hmm, so the rules at one point was, we can keep the hotel open to Humboldt County residents.
Just locals.
And people that were traveling through. So we had to kind of create the rule of, all right, well, if you're calling from out of the county, we can't take your booking. But if you're in Humboldt County, we can take your booking. Or if you're local, we can take your booking. So there's a lot of gray area there, but we had to be as careful as we can, because at that time there was very little, you know, that people knew about COVID or how it transmitted. Right. So there's a lot of fear.
Sure.
So, you know, we had to cancel a ton of weddings, you know, turn off, you know,
the bar
and restaurant. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, the restaurant at that time wasn't built yet, you know. So
you had caterers come out for the wedding.
Yeah, we had caterers doing the weddings. So we were doing sort of moving around people's lives. And also, Amy was working a lot with the brides and trying to, you know, we had an event manager that we hired to kind of help soften the blow for them, because we didn't, you know, we were all reading the same stuff, which was really confusing about if or when they could do a wedding, how they could do it, you know, what's the difference between an elopement and a wedding, and number of people and all of that stuff, and private property versus an open venue. Mm-hmm. But I mean, to set the stage a little bit more, you know, where we were at as a business is, we're still a mom and pop business. So Amy and I still owned and ran it. I was working for Poppin Barclay, one of the bigger wellness cannabis brands in California, doing compliance and real estate. So helping them get licenses, helping them follow the rules, and also renovating different, you know, real estate properties as we acquire them. Amy was, and still is, teaching it at Humboldt State University, part-time, also seeing social work clients and helping run the business. And at that time we had two kindergarten age children trying to figure out.
Twins, I'll just go ahead.
Trying to figure out how we would, you know, do COVID and what that meant. And we had a general manager that also had twin girls and an older girl. So for the beginning of COVID, Amy and Ronnie, our hotel manager, would take turns with five kids all day long running school.
So the other one could run the business.
So the other one could run the business. And I was working full-time for Pop and Barclay. So it was Amy and Ronnie, you know, changing, you know, kid duties for work duties there and just trying to...
They weren't doing one, they were doing the other. Right.
So at that time, we had to make it, you know, we felt like we had to make a decision is that we couldn't continue to have all these jobs and this business. You know, we were the business, you know, the business in its entirety, I think in the first year of COVID, we did like 750,000. So, you know, not really on the cusp of a micro business and a small business. You know, where we could pretty much manage it ourselves, but we felt that we either had to sell it and get rid of it or grow it, and get bigger. So at the time we decided what was right for us is for me to resign from Pop and Barclay, my job, and for us to reimagine this business, taking cannabis experience and, hospitality experience and put them together, which for us looks like.
And did you have any like mentors or any place that you could look where you were kind of seeing these combined that you could
my job doing compliance had me looking at regulations and how people could do these things and how they could or couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. So it was based on rules. So traditionally cannabis businesses in California would be built their business around the rules, not about the market or consumer. So what I was very much looking at is, all right, well, in Humboldt County, we're surrounded by more cannabis than anywhere else in the world. 12,000 farms. There's 2,000 to 3,000 that are legal. The rest are all traditional market. So one in every $3 in Humboldt County is a cannabis dollar. So we've always been frustrated by the different visitor service agencies in Humboldt County because they're not willing to talk about cannabis, market cannabis, or make that part of the DNA of Humboldt County, which has arguably the strongest brand in the world with cannabis, with Humboldt. Yeah. So we decided, you know, that we need to do it ourselves. So what that looked like is us delivering cannabis to our hotels every day with a delivery partner, and then running a series of dispensaries, and specifically one with Pop and Barclay, where we called it Pop and Barclay Social. So we're bringing a social component to the dispensary. So you walk in, you have a non-cannabis retail experience, a higher-end wellness boutique. You go inside, and there's a traditional dispensary experience. You go in the back, there's an activated massage, one of the few places in the world that you can get a cannabis massage. Legally.
The oils or the creams?
Yep, the cannabis oils and creams. Uh-huh. You go outside, there's an outdoor food truck restaurant on a patio, and then a smoking area in the back. So we just looked at how to take a traditional cannabis experience in dispensary and bolt on hospitality to it. And then...
extraordinary.
And for us, you know, after we decided to grow, we realized that we couldn't do our proof of concept with our, you know, five little cabins and four hotel rooms at Humboldt Bay Social Club, that we needed more rooms. So we started to look at this historic hotel called Scotia Inn at the time. During COVID, we negotiated, got financing, which was difficult because none of the banks or lenders would really listen to us or look at any data. The markets were telling them is hospitality is going down through the tube. So that's it's a really great example of bad data. So they were looking at data coming from New York, San Diego, Paris, San Francisco.
Because occupancy rates were just
occupancy tanking. Were tanking there. But what they weren't looking at is occupancy rates in Humboldt, mm-hmm. in Aspen, mm-hmm. you know, in Napa, mm-hmm. in these small areas that mm-hmm. you're getting.
Or even upstate New York, yeah. right, where people are fleeing
the
city.
Yeah, yeah. they left the city.
So there, yeah. we had this sort of double impact of remote work and people leaving to work wherever they want. And then we also had sort of refugees of COVID, people leaving the cities and not wanting to go there. And then traditional travelers. So,
cool. And then we had the folks whose larger plans were torpedoed by COVID, and then we're now doing regional travel instead.
Right, so
they're not flying, they're not traveling internationally, mm-hmm. but they still have means, mm-hmm. and they have time off, mm-hmm. so they or they're working remotely, and so they're doing the
van life thing.
Exactly, right? Or they're driving all the way. They're driving to Portland from mm-hmm. San Francisco or from Los Angeles, mm-hmm. and they're looking for places to stay, especially places that are COVID friendly. And so our cabins, our hotel suites are self-check-in, right? There's space from one another, as compared to some of the larger hotels that are really built for business travelers, and everything is enclosed and recirculated air. And so as we were looking at Scotia, that was a different model for us. This is more of a traditional hotel, right? This has a front desk. Rooms that open with keys, and things are enclosed. And so we thought a lot about, I think by the time we actually opened Scotia, we had this brief window where masking restrictions, you know, requirements had been lifted, and then the Delta variant came in. And so then we were back to masking indoors. Mm-hmm. And so we have just taken advantage of the fact that that space, it was built during a time where grandeur, right? This old time grandeur, these massively high ceilings and of this space.
Gorgeously.
And so it's just, all right, let's keep all the doors and windows open that we can, mm-hmm. allow people to spread out, encourage people to be outside as much as possible. And we've seen that that really resonate with folks.
Mm-hmm. And we were also operating off of a sort of major financial constraints. So mm-hmm. So what we saw before we started fundraising was sales go up occupancy-wise at just the Social Club Hotel, mm-hmm. to up in the 90s to 100. So yeah, just fully booked, fully booked. Mm-hmm. And it's like when we were talking to funders, they wouldn't really believe us. We were just like, I can tell you we are full.
We have a waiting list.
You know, we have waiting lists of people that want to come here. And mm-hmm. then one of the first small little emergency aid came out, you know, for COVID. It was like $25,000 from a local economic development corporation. Mm-hmm. You can get the money in 2 days. So we said, all right, well, let's build our kitchen. You know, small little room, kind of a food truss-esque, and we have 8,000 to 10,000 square feet outside of alcohol area, food area. Mm-hmm. So we used that money, built a kitchen, brought on a chef, knowing that chef we're going to hire to, you know, do food there, then open a food truck at Pop and Barkley Social, and then open Scotia for us. So in his contract, it sort of laid out these steps for him. So in general, we're trying to raise about $5.6 million to do all this, which was to launch a proof of concept in Humboldt, mm-hmm. acquire and open a hotel, open two dispensaries, one of them being the new model of bolting on all of the hospitality elements, and also starting a cannabis brand, Social Nature. So we worked with 7 different manufacturers to do that. So we raised about $2.5 million out of the $5.6 that we needed.
And just went for it.
We went for it, and looking at Scotia, we decided, all right, let's just do the second floor. It's 22 rooms. It's all, you know, mostly cosmetic, mm-hmm. you know, so redoing the carpets and the floors and all new furniture. And let's do some of the common areas, but really what we could, and we had to, you know, make choices based on the cash that we have. So we're now towards the end of our proof of concept. So we've got all of the we've got our brand nearly done with about, you know, 12 to 16 SKUs. We're going to launch it in November. We've already soft launched it in our own dispensary. So we're selling pre-rolls and tinctures and massage oils, stuff like that, vape pens. But we really wanted to finish out the year with doing whole model. And then our next step is really just kind of taking and scaling that model other places.
So in regards to the hotel, you actually opened that up in July?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we acquired the building February 15th.
So then it was just massive, let's figure out a way to open this by July.
Yeah.
June 15th was our goal. Uh-huh. July 5th or 6th was what we hit. So we were pretty darn close.
And you had a surprising quarter for that first quarter.
Yeah, so our third quarter of the year, we were able to squeak a profit. You know, we roll, you know, we've got about five or six different entities. So we roll it all up into a central balance sheet and, you know, profit and loss statement. But they, you know, we've structured it so our cannabis entity is completely separately owned from our hospitality entity. So we have two different parent companies. But we were able to squeeze a profit. You know, our... you know, we opened part of the way through June. In July, our occupancy was just shy of 70%.
Super strong.
So, you know, we have a lot of guest equity, so a lot of guests want to come back. They want to stay connected with us. Amy does a phenomenal job with social media. We just hit our, you know, 10,000 mark, which opens up, you know, other opportunities for That's us great. On yeah. Instagram and stuff like that. But right now we're still a baby business, but we have we hired a CEO so that I could focus on scaling the business. He could run it. Amy's still building out the company with him, and you know, we're, you know, really what we're discussing every day now is like, you know, how much do we want to be involved in the day-to-day basis. It's clear that I am focusing on growth and the next steps for the business, and you know, our corporate and fiduciary responsibilities, making sure we meet all of those. Amy's the face of the company, the face for the staff, and also in charge of building our culture and human resources, and at the same time still helping run the company because we've got a, you know, a new team as we're trying to figure everything out.
Yeah, and I want to, you know, I shared this with John earlier, but, you know, having now visited all three of these properties, the culture is intact and it's palpable, and I got it from everybody, like super welcoming, and very informative, supportive, non-pushy, just more like welcoming, and now like, what do you need? And then we can figure out a way to make that fit. Like at every corner, whether it was at the Scotia Lodge or whether it was, you know, at the Papa's Barclay, or even out at the Social Club, just really... And caught people kind of in a busy day, or they were just opening up or something. I think it was on a Sunday when I was at a social club, and was like, yeah, no problem. And we just immediately jumped into a conversation. So, and that's a hard thing to get right, culture. So hats off to whatever you're doing, because you don't always get that right. Early on, and it can be so devastating when you don't get it right. So that like just seeing that reinforced with everybody was really refreshing, like, and it's part of the brand.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that something you hear a lot about Humboldt is like our customer service isn't the greatest, and I think that some of that is that we, although I'll just say, like, having lived other places, I've experienced this in Portland, right? That the speed at which your barista is moving bears no relation to how long the line is. It just, it's going to happen when it's going to happen. And coming from the East Coast, you know, out here, specifically the Pacific Northwest, it remains an adjustment for me. To be like, okay, cool. We're gonna chill. It's gonna happen when it happens, and that's just it. But I think that what I believe deeply is that your staff will take care of your guests the way that you take care of them. And I think it's a challenge because hospitality has always been challenging. It is exponentially more challenging now in this COVID era, that there's the supply chain issues and people, how crunched our schedules are as people have to, you know, homeschool their children or manage all of that, plus being in charge of enforcing mask regulations or social distancing. Plus, I think just being on the receiving end of a very stressed population throughout the country. And what has always been the case in hospitality, if you've ever worked in service, you know that people take their stuff out on you because they can, because they perceive you as
off-gassing.
Yeah,
anything,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Like you are not a person in this moment. You are just an obstacle.
To my burrito.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I think that during COVID, that has been incredibly important to me, is that our staff, their health is incredibly important, their safety is important, and it is actually more important to me than our guests, because I think what we are realizing now is that the customer is always right is actually a fairly limiting paradigm, right? Because there's actually many times when the customer is not right, and we have to figure out what to do then, right? Well, how do you still manage this person? Can you help them get some kind of satisfaction? Can you get to a positive resolution? Mm-hmm. Or at least, can you just end this interaction so that they're on their way? Uh-huh. And so I think, yeah, we have a low paid service sector, and being a company that has rapidly expanded, we don't have a cushion to just pay our staff what we want to pay them. We would love to get to a point where we are the most desirable employer in the area, right? That people want to come here because these jobs are tough, but we're fair and we're supportive and you're well compensated. Mm-hmm. But we're at a point now where we're saying to our employees, like, can you take this risk with us? We're going to open this thing and here's your job description, but we don't really know what it's going to be like. So maybe in 6 months, we got to revise your job description because you're not actually doing those things, or the kitchen operations aren't the way. Exactly. So I think we're lucky that we have staff that we're open with them about what we're doing, and they see us working alongside them. And you know, when it's trash day, I'm out there getting stuff in the dumpsters, or you know, we're working on the construction with Sophia. And
I see this again because I'm recognizing it, and it's palpable. I also feel like there has been an opportunity with COVID kind of thawing a little bit to really hit a reset button on a lot of the things that we typically assume in hospitality. But, you know, it's not going to happen, you know, from inside an individual who's an employee. It's got to happen at that leadership level where, oh, I get it, and there's an opportunity here. So now it's about high levels of communication, it's regular reinforcement. And it's, you know, welcoming that feedback on
It's welcoming their feedback and acting on that feedback. It's giving them positive reinforcement, not just negative reinforcement. And I think it's identifying areas for growth for them. And that traditionally has been, oh, if you do this, you'll get this promotion. But I think growth is also, hey, I see you have this skill set. Are you interested in exploring that? Like, are you... I appreciate you being organized in this way. Can you help with this task or this task, which will, in a business as young as ours, where we're still building out even our management structure, it's like, front desk Sarah can do this also? Okay, cool. Let's pull that in, because again, in hospitality, just because that's someone's job that's not all that they are. That's not their entire skill set.
Right.
It's not necessarily their hopes and dreams. So finding out the whole person, which I think hopefully is also reflected in our guests, right? What are they looking for when they walk into our spaces, and can we meet their needs across the spectrum, not just book you this massage, what kind of hospitality experience are you looking for?
Well, also with the landscape of during COVID, we lost 30% of hospitality employees in the country permanently. So them leaving restaurant and hotel jobs not to come back. We were fighting against local and federal benefits that exceeded a minimum wage with tips job. So you had bartenders that had to decide if they wanted to make more money to stay home versus make less money and go to work. So it was hard for us to get people. And we went from 12 or 13 people in a very small mom and pop company to almost 60, you know, in a stressful time for employees when they necessarily didn't have to work if they got the right benefits. Mm-hmm. And, you know, also a scary time of like, you know, if I go to work, I could get a disease. Mm-hmm. So, we've been able to get the employees we need by, I think, being, an interesting place to work with giving as many unique benefits as we can. Mm-hmm. And I think we continue to try to figure out about how can we do more and what are ways that we can do more and I think the answer is always we try to do as much as we can.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Great conversation. We're going to hit pause for just a moment and share a couple things from our sponsors who make this all possible. We'll get right back. Our Watch Pitch podcast would not be possible without our sponsors. So to name just a few at the moment, Techstars. Techstars is the worldwide network that helps entrepreneurs succeed with over 4,000 live events that are coming back soon in over 150 countries. Techstar alumni clock in at over 300,000 participants. And from Palo Alto Software, LivePlan. It's the world's leading business plan software built for entrepreneurs like you. Pitch, plan, and track your business anywhere with over 500,000 small business customers. Now, let's get back to our podcast episode.
So I think the other piece that I think is probably a little mind-blowing to some of the people in this country where cannabis is still illegal, or the only way you can get it is if you have a medical card. Mm-hmm. California seems to be out in front of starting to have these conversations, but you know, I know, John, your experience, like boots on the ground with this, is that it's very clear that California actually has made some mistakes, and there is actually better ways to do this. So I wonder if you might share a little bit about how cannabis is being sort of folded into the hospitality experience, what is working, what isn't, and where room for improvement definitely needs to be considered.
Yeah, we are operating in a state with ever-changing regulations, in an environment with regulators that are trying to interpret those regulations. You know, specifically when we're doing deliveries of cannabis to the hotels, I mean, you can go in any hotel in the state of California, look up a delivery company on your phone, and get cannabis delivered to your hotel. What happens next is you ask your hotel, what do you do with it? They say, oh, well, you can't smoke it on the grounds, you can't smoke it inside, you can't smoke it in public, you can't smoke it in your rental car, good luck. And you're like, oh, wow, well, that's broken. So what we had to do is we had to unlicense some of our alcohol area. Mm-hmm. So work with the Alcoholic Beverage Control to kind of create space to do it legally. We chose to work with a third-party delivery company to deliver it to us so that we weren't, the hospitality company wasn't the one doing that transaction. So that doesn't sort of pierce that corporate veil. So the hotel company is not selling cannabis. They're mm-hmm. just allowing, they're just having a menu there of a delivery company to deliver it. We had to meet with, you know, our lawyer and our CEO met with the sheriff ahead of time and walked through the regulatory rules, the way we're going to implement this, and asked for feedback and asked if he agreed with us on our interpretation of the law. So we did all that pre-work to make sure that'll work. In Eureka, where we did our first of its kind smoking lounge, cannabis massage, we started with blueprints of exactly where these things would happen, met with the city of Eureka, planning, building, police, walked through our business model, showed them conceptuals of it, talked to them about what we did, what we're doing and what we weren't doing, you know, made the choice to not allow people under 21, you know, so that we, you know, on the non-cannabis areas where we could, so we could, you know, we could have had children where the food truck is, and we chose not to. Mm-hmm. To be able to take as much feedback from the police as possible. So for us, it's just about, you know, doing what we can, but as transparently with the regulators as we could so that, you know, we wouldn't get in trouble, and also not pushing it too hard. So like, mm-hmm. you know, not trying to get an alcohol license right next to our cannabis license, you know, not trying to put a dispensary in our hotel, like stuff like that. So we're taking it one step at a time. I think the regulations will catch up. Mm-hmm. But for now, it's understanding how to do it, being confident that the public wants a new experience with cannabis, and then implementing it, which is what we were able to do this year. So, you know, turning that on, implementing it, building, you know, we have two lifestyle brands, Humble Bay Provisions and Social Nature. So Provisions is our line of sort of beers, wines, you know, fish products, coffees, sort of hospitality-based products that you would get at a hotel or a restaurant. And then Social Nature is our cannabis-based products and or hemp that that you would that any cannabis company would make. Everything from smokables to tinctures to edibles to beverages. So we're trying to build that brand at the same time, and we're trying to build the brand by, you know, having a delivery company deliver it to our hotels, and we're building the brand by selling it at our dispensaries, and then we'll be scaling the brand by bringing these social bolt-on components to other dispensaries in the state and other areas. So that's our plan.
It's really leading edge, and I think that when looking even more ahead from where you are now, I know you're living this right now, literally learning something every day about what's working and where the friction is and how to fine-tune it. I know there's some ambition here to also take this to other places, and it may be a little early to talk about that right now, but I think in the context of COVID, just because it's seasonally relevant to our season here with Watch Pitch, you know, COVID has been a very obstructive force in a lot of businesses, and somehow, in spite of that, you guys have figured out a way to keep moving forward. And not only that, but you've launched during COVID. What could you say to some of those startups and actually current businesses to kind of help them navigate that issue in order to at least clarify a healthier direction to go and then not be derailed? Because I'm not hearing any indications that you have been derailed by COVID. I hear a lot of speed bumps. I hear a lot of pivots, but I don't hear a derail. And I wonder, you know, knowing there's a lot of people who are business owners and they're faced with that giant C word in the world, how have you navigated that obstacle? And I'm wondering if it's something that might help others with navigating that as well for their own business. Now, I don't know if this is particular to hospitality. Obviously, this would be where we would be applying it. But, you know, somehow you guys got the right mindset on to go, yeah, all right, well, whatever. We're still going to move forward. You know, was it just like internal momentum? It was like, yeah, whatever. We're just going to do this because we have momentum inside of us. Or were you consciously navigating COVID in a way that allowed you to continue to thrive?
I think that we, as John said a little earlier, you know, we knew that it was this or shut it down, right? Either we grow or we're done, because we don't want to be sole proprietors, you know, of a bed and breakfast, essentially. We don't. Mm-hmm. We have mm-hmm. other things that we want to do. Mm-hmm. Our passion does not lie in just day in, day out operations. And we wanted to be able to employ more people, and we couldn't at the scale that we were at. Mm-hmm. And I think every business faces decision points like that, right? And I think with COVID, Zoom was this perfectly positioned, right? They had this product, yeah, right. COVID hit, and they were like, boom, everyone needs this right now. Great.
Yeah.
We had some element of that, right? That we, because of the indoor-outdoor nature of our properties, that we were well positioned. Mm-hmm. I think there are some businesses that are certainly not, right? There does come a point when you've got to read the market and say, okay, I've got this service, the demand is not there, so let me cut my losses and try something different, or let me reinvent this. And I think that's a decision that we're making now, right? We even have elements of our business where we're like, okay, all these things are doing great and have potential. We're flatlining over here. So are we going to put more resources here, or are we just going to shutter this and redirect, you know, that blood flow basically elsewhere.
Sure.
So I think being willing to have those tough conversations with your team, and as much as I appreciate, you know, John is this relentless drive, mm-hmm. as you know, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. I, as I said, am much more fear-based. And I think that it's really important on a team to have both. Someone needs to say, well, worst case scenario, mm-hmm. what's our plan, right? And someone needs to say, mm-hmm. well, if we want to be here in 5 years, we got to start planning now. We can't just focus on the day-to-day operations. So I think that we're lucky that we have a balanced team. We're young, you know, our executive team, we're green, and we have a breadth of experiences in lots of different areas, but no one's, we're building the ship as we sail it. So I think, yeah, being willing to really debate that. We were just, before you got here, we were just having a conversation with our CEO, and he's like, can I just come over tomorrow? Can we just map this out? I need to draw this out. And I think that's what you really have to do when some of these concepts are just...
And tomorrow's Saturday.
Well, yeah, tomorrow's Saturday. Right. Yeah.
Well, I think,
dang it, right.
Well, look, I mean, I think, I look at it on the other hand. I do see as a team, we may be green together because we launched this thing. But, you know, individually, you know, we've done enough. So we hired Aaron Sweat, who came from another cannabis company doing manufacturing and distribution. So he's been through the life cycle of making products. He understands cannabis regulation. He understands startup. You know, he understands balance sheets, all of those things. So we brought him in to do that part. So do we have the skills to start a brand? Yes. I was part of two of the biggest cannabis brands in California or the nation. So I saw those different components. So it's like, all right, can we do this cannabis thing? Yes. Do we know the regulatory hurdles? Do we have enough money? Do we have the design sense project? Yes, we can do that. Can we do this hotel? All right, we've got 9 rooms. This is our experience. But, you know, with my last job, I deployed over $20 million in real estate assets, renovations, jobs. We've done every single room or house all ourselves, doing the design and the functions. So could we handle a $700,000-$800,000 project in a quarter or half a year? Yeah, we can do it. It's within our skill set.
Right. Yeah.
So I would call that overconfidence. He says things like that, I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't see it that way. Like,
I see it as like our 21st project.
Uh-huh.
You know, right. So you go back and count all those.
Yes, right. Yeah.
Like, you know, this is not our first bar that we're building. This is not our first hotel room. You know, we hired a hospitality manager that managed by himself 60 vacation rentals individually. And before that, he ran, you know, the nicest boutique hotel in the area. And he understood the algorithms and pricing elasticity and knew that, and I felt confident that he could build a model and do it. Mm-hmm. And that's why we almost had 70% occupancy our second month when we opened. So, but it's about looking at this group of people and saying, all right, do we have the individual skill set to do it together? Mm-hmm. Amy calls it green, but I just call it an opportunity to take this talent and turn it on. I mean, we also hired Aaron, who in his last career, he was an architect. He was licensed in Florida and Texas. So now we take our back of the envelope sketches and our lookbooks. And now we have, you know, our CEO that can draw it up and submit plans and, you know, do budgeting in a way that we haven't. You know, we've always been very good at budgeting, you know, but we always, you know, spend 10 or 20% more than our budget, you know. So having these, you know, these talented people behind us, it's his first time as a CEO, but it's not his first time running a company.
Right.
You know, and it might be his first time supporting a hospitality business, but it's not his first time working with hospitality businesses. So, you know, I see it as a calculated risk. So like, you know, for us to open by the summer, you know, when we acquired the property February 15th, it was a stretch. We were trying to get it by January 1st. But we also waited till every single permit went through. So we had our alcohol license. We had our certificate of occupancy to run as a hotel, and we had our kitchen certified and approved by the health department. So we didn't take acquisition to this because we knew what the pitfalls are.
Sure,
so like if we didn't have those, someone could tell us no, we couldn't open. Mm-hmm. So we you know, stared down our obstacles and then implemented, and it's been bumpy, but we did it. You know, we opened we totally renovated and opened a hotel in a couple months. So,
yeah, it's remarkable. I really want to encourage people to click on the links and visit these properties and these brands that you guys have created, because it's really been an amazing accomplishment in a short period of time. And I think you've really dropped some very significant building block ideas that really can be, you know, applied to other people's businesses and the other ways that they do business. And I love the kind of the Lego approach of skill sets that then are modular, that can actually, you know, spill over into other areas of operations and growth. Like, massive vision there. Thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. It's been nice to visit Humboldt, and you can be certain I'll be back.
Thank you, Trey. What a pleasure. All right.
This conversation with John and Amy was so revelatory and helpful. Super warm to be invited to their home, surrounded by redwoods and that crackling living room fire. So as cannabis becomes increasingly normalized, we will see this sector expand. John and Amy are proof positive that this can be consciously done with some grit and determination to work with regulatory groups and local rules that are constantly adjusting to both COVID at the moment and to the acceptance of cannabis as legal. I want to encourage you to visit their Indiegogo campaign page, listed as the Scotia Lodge Swim Club, for a crowdfund campaign raise for a year-round outdoor community pool project. Great video. You'll see lots of clips from the hotel and some pretty sweet perks too. We are indeed on a threshold, a restart, and new beginning looking forward against a challenging past, but a future with new opportunities to embrace. Thank you for joining me, Trey Scott, and our guests John O'Connor and Amy Cincione O'Connor for Season 5, Episode 5 of the Watch Pitch Podcast and YouTube channel. Thank you for listening to our Watch Pitch Podcast. Please give us an awesome review in the iTunes Store, on Stitcher, or wherever you downloaded the Watch Pitch Podcast. We appreciate your appreciation. There are also some other great past interviews, so take a look at the library and see what we have. And by all means, subscribe and don't miss out on our next inspired conversation. We can also be found and welcome your following on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And once again, if you need or want personalized coaching for your next upcoming pitch, email us direct at podcast@watchpitch.com. Lots of tips and support to get started or polish your next pitch. Thanks again for visiting and listening to now your Watch Pitch Podcast.